And welcome back, everybody, to today's Brexit podcast. And happy election morning to you all. Big day. And just before you rush out to the polling booths, I have one young lady on the phone who would like to give you one last thing to think about. I'm joined today by Frances Foley from the Progressive Alliance. Frances, it's election morning. If you've one message for the voters, what's it going to be?
Yeah, well, our message to the voters today is just the same as it has been throughout the campaign, really. Think clearly, think strategically, think long-term. Think about how your vote is going to be affected in your particular seat, and think about who you want to represent you in Parliament. And by that, we mean, you know, go to our website, go to www.progressivealliance.org.uk. It gives good seat recommendations. It tells you the full information that you need to know. And we're just saying vote for the best placed progressive candidate to beat the Tories in your area.
So let's take it back a step. Tell me what the Progressive Alliance is all about.
So the Progressive Alliance is an idea that's been around a long time, and it's got actually very firm historical roots in terms of progressive parties working together on common issues and to achieve common aims. And in the past few months, the Compass, who's the organisation empowering the Progressive Alliance, have really turned to focus a lot of their energy on this, because we see it as a way to move beyond what we see as quite a broken political system, both the first past the post system, and the way that develops a culture of antagonism between the different parties. It means that there's not a lot of cooperation between parties, even on things that they agree on. So our first kind of major political intervention in this sphere was in the Richmond by-election, where we decided to get involved on the ground. The Compass have always been a space about opening up to different progressive small parties and none. And in 2011, they made the decision to open up to people of all parties. Previously, Compass started out as a Labour pressure group within the Labour Party. But they saw that the direction of travel was really about opening up space where people could just discuss ideas from many different parties, and actually across silos and across these divisions which sometimes develop between parties and sort of tribalism. And at the Richmond Park by-election, you could see that this had a real impact on the ground in a by-election circumstance. And this meant that the Green Party's decision to step down allowed a lot more collegiate approach between the Lib Dems and Greens, and that the voters were way further ahead than the parties on this one. So Labour voters really in their large numbers switched to Lib Dem because they saw the Lib Dem candidate was the best placed person to defeat Zach Goldsmith. And so we really understood that there was an appetite out there for this, that it was about parties doing a different way of doing things, about much more collaboration, much more cooperation. And I think that's really shown up in the response we've had to this campaign.
Okay, so let's you mentioned the Richmond by-election there, so let's stick with that for a second. I guess that Goldsmith's response to that might be that whilst you feel that progressive parties being collaboration and less divisiveness, it was actually everyone ganging up on him.
Yeah, in that particular instance, I guess he could well feel like that, because there was a strong shift away from him for a whole number of reasons. And we were aware that the different factors playing out that by-election meant that it was kind of difficult to see one clear thing that happened. Of course, with his mayoral campaign, and there was a lot of issues of division around that. And of course, his response to Brexit, which in a very strong Remain area was playing out on the ground against him locally. But we were saying it's a much broader picture than that. It's less about ganging up on individual candidates. And this has been shown at this electoral campaign, where it's really been this cross, completely nationwide movement of people just in their local areas making local decisions based on local concerns about who they want their MP to be. And that's what we've always stressed throughout the campaign, is there's no one-size-fits-all for this. It's really a local democratic decision that has to happen from the grassroots up if it's going to happen at all.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. You touched on the fact that you felt that the first past the post electoral system was unfair and leads to divisiveness. Can you explain that in a little more detail? And also, what sort of system would be more fair then in your eyes?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think part of what we're saying is there is the sort of blatant unfairness of how the votes map out in the first past the post system. In the southeast of England, for example, in 2015, you had the Tories earn about 50% of the votes and get 93% of the seats. Now, obviously, it's just massively disproportionate. You've got 4 million votes for UKIP, just over 1 million votes for the Greens at the last election, both of whom got one MP each. Most people looking at those stats can see this is full unreflective of actually the voters' will on the ground. But there's the kind of hard stats and mathematical approach to this. But I think also what we're saying about first past the post in terms of culture is that it encourages and entrenches divisions between parties. It does not further or incentivize in any way a kind of cross-party approach, alliance building, coalition building, which is slightly more amenable to longer term and sort of more strategic thinking for collective decision-making problems and sort of sustainable goals which require a little bit more than electoral cycle. I think you can look at this by, whilst PR is by no means, proportional representation is by no means a silver bullet, in countries where that is the case, you can even see there's been a lot of good research to show that there's amazing sociological impacts and political impacts of those sorts of things. So, for example, that they have better, higher levels of equality and sort of better outcomes in terms of actual social policy goals rather than just the political culture. And so what we're saying is that by all means and methods, our political system is really not fit for purpose any longer, and it doesn't respond to a world in which actually we have a seven-party system trying to exist in a system that was built for two parties, which is, you know, no longer reflective of the political landscape of the country.
Thanks, Frances. Are there countries out there that you feel are doing proportional representation really well, and who would you put out as a shining light?
That's a good question. I mean, as part of the campaign, we're not advocating one particular system of proportional representation. Our model is, and it's definitely an interesting debate to be had. I would definitely give a shout out to Make Votes Matter, who is a national campaign for proportional representation. They have some really good models about how different systems of proportional representation actually work, and lots of different examples nationally and globally. And I think it's a subject for debate, because then you get sort of lost in the minutiae of the different systems. I would say there are quite a few examples in Europe of different ways of doing things. I like the kind of mixed methods system of the German system, which tries to have this kind of party list approach whilst also keeping a kind of link to the constituency. Lots of people like the idea that we have a local MP who you kind of can directly elect as your representative in Parliament. And I think any system which kind of tries to preserve that link between the local and the national would be a good thing.
So when the Liberals were in coalition with the Tories a few years back, did you see that as quite a progressive move, or did it just sort of stymie any kind of development, really? I guess that's the argument against what you're proposing, is that nothing ever gets done and it lacks leadership.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about the coalition. I think a really big point to make was that at the time, you know, Britain really don't historically have a strong tradition of coalition governments. I mean, we did have coalition governments, and I mean, certainly around the war period, we had coalition governments, which actually were seen by lots of people as, you know, a kind of necessary move to respond to kind of urgent nature of the times. And so the tradition and the culture of these things are really important in terms of how the country reacts to it. I think lots of people in this country potentially perceive coalition politics to be quite weak. So they worry about sort of the strength of leadership that the parties are able to show in a coalition. Whereas actually, we're also trying to emphasize the other side of things, which is that coalitions and alliance building is actually what we all should be trying to foster, you know, more collaboration where we agree on things, more kind of coming together around particular issues to get things done, and a more longer term approach, which doesn't just see people as kind of, you know, dead set white and black enemies, but rather that it's more about kind of finding a solution that best fits the needs of the country rather than arguing over political differences. I think there's a certain element to which, you know, our culture, when you look at the way the Parliament set up, this kind of, you know, two swords widths across the chamber with two parties, you know, two blocks sitting opposite each other, that kind of very antagonistic culture is reflected then in our political dialogue, which, you know, the tenor of Parliamentary question times, you know, whilst it can be quite interesting and diverting as a spectacle, a lot of people, I think, would question whether it actually leads to that kind of intelligent debate which our politics at this time so much needs and deserves.
So let's bring it back to today. Now, some polls, and I know there are different polls out there, but some polls, particularly one here from the Constitution of Society, based on the current polling numbers, they said a progressive alliance between Labour, Lib Dems, Greens would still lead to a comfortable Conservative majority of 64 seats. So you need a big swing. How are things, we're actually recording this on Tuesday, so how are things progressing for you, and how positive are you of the outcome of the end of today, as it will be?
So I think there's two things to say about this, obviously, which is that, you know, our sort of starting premise is that where people vote tactically, they have a very good chance of getting a progressive MP elected. I mean, there are many examples, as I say, throughout history, but one example which is often forgotten about is the 97 election. Lots of people saw this as a big landslide for Labour, and of course it was. But what's less talked about is how much the Liberal Democrats were instrumental in that, which is that, you know, Liberal Democrat voters lending their votes to Labour to help ensure that landslide. And I think where that can happen as a coordinated effort, that can really make a huge difference. I mean, there's this kind of number which is quite often floated around, and, you know, it's interesting to see whether, you know, this is actually borne out in terms of the results, but the sort of number of kind of 200,000 swing voters, which all it needs really to swing an election at any one time. I mean, in some respects, that just highlights how undemocratic our system is that, you know, if 200,000 people can swing an election, that's not very democratic for the rest of the people. Most people live in safe seats. But nonetheless, that's what we're saying is, you know, play the system to break the system. We want to see this move away from the first-past-the-post system so people don't have to go to the ballot box holding their nose, and that they can go and who they want to vote for. And in terms of today, I think what we're hoping for is just that people go out, you know, think clearly about who they want to vote for, perhaps think about the common ground between the different parties rather than necessarily the differences, and think beyond the tradition that people might have voted for in the past. I mean, I've even been thinking more strongly about my vote this time, you know, which is that, you know, how am I going to vote this time to properly reflect what's going on in my constituency, and how do I get the best placed person in Parliament for that? And a good bit of, you know, a little knowledge goes a long way in this respect. So do go on and use our voting tool if you're a bit unsure, if you want to get the full facts down. And so what we're really hoping to see is that in areas where on the ground people, local people of all different parties have come together around this common campaign, it's really been unprecedented, and we've been kind of taken aback by the level of response that's been shown across the country in all these constituencies. So I think no matter about the outcome, we're really looking to the longer term. This is not an idea that's going to go away. It has massive credence and it has massive power amongst a large section of the population. So we're really hoping that today, no matter what happens, it's really about a case of celebrating the victories locally, where people have managed to come together and put aside their tribal differences to hopefully get a good outcome.
Sure. I did go on to the website just ahead of the call and put in my own postcode. And my area of voting is a strong Tory area, and it suggested actually that I didn't cast my vote in this case, but actually went and canvassed in a neighbouring constituency. So given if I'm in one that, you know, you feel you cannot affect with tactical voting at this point, I guess because the Tory majority is too strong, how many of the 650 do you think you can affect?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's sort of varying levels of different levels of effectiveness in different places. So we do have around, you know, 100, 200 seats where we think that actually it could have a very strong effect. And if you go on and look at, you know, your particular seat, then it may come off as a very big box comes up saying that this is a really important seat, and it shows you sort of the key, this is the key marginal. In other areas, it says things like, there is a potential for a progressive MP here, for example, in areas where the combined progressive vote last time was less than 10% behind the Conservatives. It's a potential with a reasonable enough swing and enough tactical voting that there are people who could unseat their Tory MP where they are. That said, we've also really tried to focus in on a number of target seats. So on our website, you'll find our 31 target clusters, which are seats where we think that there is a strong alliance building culture in many of these places. An alliance has already happened with parties stepping down for one another to support key candidates and getting behind one candidate. So as I said, you know, it's kind of this double approach for us. It is about the tactical voting, and especially on election day, it's really that, you know, that vote, and think about the power of your vote individually. But actually, in terms of now and for the longer term, we're also trying to encourage this alliance building culture. And that's where you've seen the kind of on the ground activity that you've not had, to my knowledge, at previous elections, where groups of people from different parties are going out door knocking to get behind one candidate. So you've got Greens and Lib Dems and Labour in different areas knocking on people's doors, which has produced a very interesting result. You know, lots of people are surprised to see two people of different parties on the doorstep together. So I think that alone has been a success story for us, to show how local people across the country have really gathered around this idea and And so that's something to show, and that's really shown in the 31 seats where we've really, really engaged strongly and had such a great uptake from local people who are doing it completely off their own backs.
Just to add a bit of frisson of excitement to everything and probably push you for a prediction, do you see any Tory big hitters being unseated in the next 24 hours?
Well, that's a tricky one. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think there are some places which have really surprised us, actually, in the uptake around this. So places like Hastings and Rye, you know, Amber Rudd's seat, it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one there. Yeah. Obviously, that's one where we were looking at it and thinking, well, we didn't expect the level of the excitement that happened locally, the level of maturity, actually, as well, and leadership that the parties have shown to come together to kind of advocate for this. And it's been really exciting for us to follow that campaign and, you know, give them our support where we can. And doing some of these barnstorming activities with Claire Sandberg from the Bernie Sanders campaign has really helped sort of get that energy up with people locally. So they've done a fantastic job there. And the other obvious mention is our great Southwest Surrey seat, which was, you know, if you're looking at somewhere like Richmond where the progressive vote can swing it and can win the seat, the Southwest Surrey approach is, it also goes to show that no matter where you are, even if you're in Southwest Surrey, which is one of the safest seats in the country, question mark, is it? You know, it's possible for people there to come round, and they had a progressive forum where they decided on the candidate that they most wanted to unseat Jeremy Hunt, and that's been Louise Irvine from the National Health Action Party. And to just see what's been going on there, the fantastic sort of vibrancy of their campaign, their creative methods, their sort of campaigning approach, it's been really fantastic to see that can happen. And obviously, were that to have an impact and unseat the, you know, the health minister who's been so unpopular and presided over such chaos in the NHS, that would be a big win for us and the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one to watch later on today. I'll probably just qualify my comment there on Amber Rudd. There's a viral video doing the round from the hustings in Hastings where she appears to have one of the speakers shut down by passing a note over to the adjudicator.
Oh,
I'm sure people can go and Google that and look it up. It seems to be doing great guns on going virally on social media.
You probably
expect. Look, it is the Brexit podcast. We haven't really touched on the subject of Brexit yet, but I think it's it's election day too, and we've done some important issues. But how big a factor has Brexit played in some of the Progressive Alliance discussions over the past few months as you've been ramping up to this election?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, and no one can avoid talking about Brexit at a time like this. I think what we say as part of our campaign is we're not taking a position on Brexit, and that for us has been actually a really strong pillar of our campaign. I think actually, perhaps paradoxically, it's led to a lot more debate around Brexit because people feel, both Leavers and Remainers feel, that they can come into the space that we're opening up and talk about things. So it's not about being for Remainers or being for Leavers. It's about saying, you know, we've been working in this space for quite a long time, and we actually see that there's far much more bringing those sides together and actually than that divides them. And in that respect, it's been important for us to say there are lots of reasons for people voting Leave and Remain on both sides, and that actually, for me, a lot of the really interesting finer points of the reasons, whether they be rational, emotional, political, or sociological, that people voted the way that they did, has been lost in the kind of clamour of the, you've seen the sort of antagonism, this massive chasm open up around British politics, around the question of Brexit in the last year. But what's been actually quite gratifying at this election is to also see that those divisions haven't necessarily played out in terms of somehow some people were expecting them to, in the sense of lots of people are trying to speak past those divides and say what actually brings us together as a country. I mean, just an interesting note is that lots of people were expecting it to be the Brexit general election, and we actually feel that, you know, our decision not to take a position on Brexit, which was reflective actually of the quite broad spectrum of opinion within Compass and within the people that we work with, meant that was actually then still a space that we could hold to open up these other debates. And we've not seen that being reflected in the wider campaigns, actually, of either the Tory or the Labour Party. That having been said, you know, of course, Brexit is a key issue. It will dominate a lot of the political discussion, especially in the years to come, no matter who gets elected. But we feel that that's a discussion which is best had in the same spirit of, you know, understanding and kind of openness and curiosity about one another's side, which we felt has not been really shown by either side of the, you know, some of the parts of the Leave and Remain campaigns were extremely divisive and in fact serve to kind of entrench those divisions rather than open up questions about why people might be voting the way they were.
Yeah, it's something that we've always, since we started doing this podcast, we've the division and antagonism is something that we've kind of felt almost at every turn. I'm guessing, though, it would probably be a lot easier to find Remain voters who were pro the Progressive Alliance than Leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously, in some respects, reflected obviously just simply in the political parties that we're working with. Of course, you've got the Lib Dems and the Greens still having a very, very strong pro-EU line. And you've got Labour holding this space, which, you know, they campaign for Remain, but they also have a lot of their voters and Leave. I think it's about a third of Labour voters voted to Leave. And we're trying to say it's really important that we kind of keep that conversation going, because as soon as you try to alienate people through what was a very complicated, you know, complicated set of circumstances which led up to that referendum, and in fact still we're trying to, you know, and I'm sure through the podcast you've been trying to unpick sort of some of the factors and some of the streams and eddies which were at play there in that whole referendum campaign. And it certainly was something, you know, I was working on a campaign last year, which was a series of events, deliberative events around the EU. And what you really saw there was people really clamouring to have some sort of proper dialogue about this. Lots of people just came to the debate quite fresh, didn't really know what they thought about the EU. And even on the day itself, were very undecided. So the result being actually as close as it was reflects that. And what we're saying is that even though political parties, and you're right, you know, the Lib Dems and the Greens very strongly have this pro-EU line, we want to say that, you know, that debate for the moment, we have got Brexit happening, we are going to leave the EU, let's move to thinking about how we do it to best address the needs of this country and our position, you know, or internationally as well.
Okay, Francis, I know you're incredibly busy, so I've got a very couple of quick questions for you just to finish off. The first one is, there's always a danger when you're talking, let's say something like the Progressive Alliance, is that you're only ever preaching to the converted and other people will switch off from your message. What would you say to those, I guess, will be staunch Tory voters who would possibly never even heard of you and wouldn't want a bar of what you've got to say? Is there anything that you can say to change their mind today? And then secondly, and just finally, what should people do now in regards to the Progressive Alliance, given they'll be voting over the next few hours?
Yeah, so the first point is a good one. I mean, given that Compass has tried to be a space which really rejects tribalism and tries to be inclusive, of course we do say, please, you know, come along, give us a chance. Even if you consider yourself a Tory, there are many things that people agree on. And we try to be quite an exploratory space, so we feel that there is a lot of political dialogue which is hampered by people already being quite certain in their position. You see that around big questions like the EU, you know, people didn't necessarily know, and a lot of people felt backed into corners to have to take political positions based on previous history or what their party was saying or what their milieu was saying. And so what Compass has always tried to do is be a space where people can come to with a lot of questions and just meet other people and work together. Now, that doesn't mean, obviously, the balance there is you don't want to get so open that you never campaign on anything or you never really take stands on anything. But our longer term aim is really to change the political culture, the way that we do politics in this country, which is often very hampered by division and tension, and also just is contained within a political system which is not fit for the 21st century, a time of fluidity, of connectedness, of people trying to face big collective action problems, which we haven't faced in the past. And so we were saying basically that the politics of 2017 should speak to the time and require a different kind of way of doing things. So I would say to Tory voters, you know, give us a chance, come to one of our meetings. You know, we're a nice bunch, we don't bite. And the good thing is that it's very highly participatory. So unlike other meetings, you might get your chance, you know, you will get your chance, you will be asked what you think, and you'll get your chance to speak and meet other people who may share your political views and maybe more importantly don't. And on the second question of what people should do today, I would say, yeah, of course, go vote. Please do vote for the best place, Progressive, because tactical voting can have a big impact. But we're also about the strategic long-term element of this. We're pretty bold in our vision. We're pretty ambitious. And we think that best change comes from the ground up, and that people, you know, have to start doing things and not waiting for other people to do things for them. So it's really about activating that spirit of kind of local alliance building, which we've seen throughout this campaign, which has been so inspiring for us, and taking that forward into the next few years and beyond.
Sure. And so if they have been inspired by listening to you today, then they go to the Progressive Alliance website and they can pop in their postcode and that will tell
them
clear on the voting.
That's right. And after today as well, the website will still be there tomorrow. We're going to have different content. We'll be have different asks. And we have quite big plans for the summer of, you know, having a bit of a road show around the country, going to speak to different groups, actually talk to the places where alliances were built and where they weren't, and talk about the different reasons for that. And so it's really going to be this hands-on participatory kind of reflective culture after the election, with a very strong, ambitious view to kind of building this idea over the coming weeks and months, no matter what happens in the political sphere. So definitely go to the website, progressivealliance.org.uk. Type in your postcode and see what's going on near you. And then afterwards, hopefully we'll be building a movement which comes out of this feeling bigger and better and stronger and learning some of the lessons of what happened in this election.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please feel free to subscribe to us and follow us on the usual social networks at Brexit Podcast and at brexitpodcast.com to stay up to date on all the best Brexit news and opinions. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming and Warren Paul, and our theme song is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod.